It's the Noon Report from Family Life, bringing a Christian worldview to what's happening in New York, Pennsylvania, across the country, and around the world. Weather with Kevin Williams, sports with Sunny Delfiette, plus special features and reports with the Family Life News team. Now, here's what's happening.
On Edge in Afghanistan. Hello again. Welcome to the broadcast.
All of this looks a lot like Benghazi on steroids.
Yesterday's carnage in Kabul complicating the evacuation efforts in Taliban-controlled Afghanistan.
These terrorists will not win.
President Biden with the following message for those responsible for the violence.
We will hunt you down and make you pay.
But the critics of the president blame him for what happened.
This blood of our American service members and our allies is on him. One strategic blunder after the next.
The Pentagon today said it was a single suicide bomber, not two, at the Kabul airport that left 170 people dead, including 13 American soldiers and Marines.
The deadliest day for U.S. troops in 10 years.
Former NATO Commander James Stefanides.
It was a bad day for the president. It was a terrible day for those families. There's no good solution here. We are one truck bomb, one C-17 shoot down away from this mission going sideways.
Despite the violence, the Biden administration remains committed to its August 31st getting out date. White House Press Secretary Jen Psaki.
The president relies on the advice of his military commanders, and they continue to believe that it is essential to get out by the 31st. That is their advice.
Tennessee Congressman Mark Green says if he were advising the president.
I think the president of the United States should come out and say all bets are off. I'd put more military in there. I'd get every single American out. And I'd start killing bad guys.
An offshoot of ISIS claiming responsibility for the terror attack. Correspondent Stephen Portnoy.
As he vows to hunt down the leaders of ISIS-K and facilitate more evacuations, the president also intends to stick to his August 31st deadline for the withdrawal of U.S. troops. The president said he believed the Taliban would act in its own self-interest and provide safe passage for those who seek to leave Afghanistan.
They're not good guys, Taliban. I'm not suggesting that at all. But they have keen interests.
Mr. Biden suggested the Taliban would need help to keep the Kabul airport operating and the country's economy from collapsing.
About 1,000 Americans remain in Afghanistan. The window for them getting out is closing fast. Retired four-star Army General Jack Keane fears hundreds may be left behind.
We should stick to our guns and get this thing done properly in terms of completing the mission. And the mission is get our people out. And we're going to walk out not having completed it. It's a stain on our national honor.
On Capitol Hill, lawmakers are pushing back against the president's Afghan game plan. Nancy Cordes continues our coverage.
Republican leader Mitch McConnell wrote, "This murderous attack offers the clearest possible reminder that terrorists will not stop fighting the United States just because our politicians grow tired of fighting them."
Former Marine Corps General Jack Bergman says every decision the president has made thus far regarding Afghanistan has been an unmitigated disaster.
This has been an absolute failure of historic proportions, failing to evacuate Americans until the troops are leaving. That's disgraceful, and it's dereliction of duty, and it's costing lives.
Florida Congressman and ex-Green Beret Michael Waltz.
Here's what has me so frustrated is those future soldiers, when they do have to go back again, either after we've suffered another Pulse nightclub or San Bernardino or, God forbid, another 9/11. They now have no bases. We gave them all away. No local allies. They're being hunted down. And they're going to have to fight through a terrorist army that's armed to the teeth with billions of dollars of American equipment. That blood, when that happens, is going to be on Biden's hands.
The Taliban reportedly has a list of American citizens given to them by us, U.S. officials. This list of names was turned over in order to allow the Americans free entry into the Kabul airport for evacuation. Critics say this list amounts to a kill list for the Taliban. Other news this Friday afternoon, parts of the U.S. Gulf Coast under hurricane warnings as Tropical Storm Ida strengthens in the Caribbean. Louisiana Governor John Bel Edwards.
The Hurricane Center and the meteorologists are very concerned about this storm because they see all the conditions necessary for it to strengthen very, very rapidly.
Ida slams into Cuba today and could take aim at New Orleans late Sunday or early Monday. Meteorologist Bill Cairns.
The bottom line is this storm has 60 hours until until landfall, and it's going to intensify all the way up until landfall. So it's just a matter of how strong can this storm get in the next 60 hours, pretty much 2.5 days.
Ida could wind up being the strongest of the storms this hurricane season. The U.S. Supreme Court says evictions can continue nationwide. The justices have blocked a pandemic ban put in place by the Biden administration.
In a 6-3 decision, the Supreme Court ruled for the federal eviction moratorium to continue, Congress would have to act. The Biden administration had issued the new, more targeted eviction moratorium earlier this month. Some 8 million households are behind on rent, according to the latest census data from mid-August.
Sarah Wise reporting a judge today takes up Florida's face mask in school rule.
That mask is not a political statement. It's a safety device.
The controversy has pitted education officials in the Sunshine State against Florida Governor Ron DeSantis.
Parents are in the better position to make the decision about whether their kids should be wearing the mask in school, particularly young kids.
DeSantis says districts cannot force kids to wear face coverings in the classroom. A dozen of Florida's 67 countywide school districts have imposed their own mask mandates in defiance of the governor's order. Still to come on the Noon Report. For a Friday, Corning says no to Zoom school. Fair attendance down in Syracuse, and why the experts are saying do your Christmas shopping now. But first, weather with Kevin Williams.
Well, a very good afternoon to all. The weekend is upon us, and the weather this weekend looks decidedly mixed. For a while, there will be some sunshine. There'll be some showers and thunderstorms around as well. Forecast details are yours in 10 minutes.
All right, we will look for you then. Thank you, Kevin. We're checking the stories making news across New York and Pennsylvania next. New York Governor Kathy Hochul vowing to remain vigilant following yesterday's suicide bombing at the airport in Kabul, Afghanistan.
We are going to be making sure that our security is beefed up in all of our vulnerable locations. Again, I used to be on Homeland Security Committee as well, so I have a background in making sure that we identify any threats and address them and eradicate them before anything could happen.
With the 20th anniversary of 9/11 approaching, some fear ISIS sympathizers will be inspired to act against the homeland. This year's Great New York State Fair is on track to be the lowest attended fair in 4 decades, even with 5 extra days this year. Family Life's Jeremy Miller reports from Syracuse.
And that's right. More than 228,000 people walked through the gates over the first 6 days of the fair. That's an average of about 38,000 per day. Now, if that trend holds for the remaining 12 days, total attendance will be about 686,000. Now, the last time attendance was below 700,000 was back in 1981, but the fair back then only ran for 10 days. In the last fair that we saw, 2019, the state fair drew a record 1.3 million visitors over 13 total days. Matter of fact, the fair had set attendance records for 4 years in a row, topping 1 million visitors in 2017, 18, and 19. And it's pretty clear right now that COVID-19 concerns are keeping would-be fairgoers at home. Masks are required inside all New York State Fair buildings this year, but not everyone is following the rules. And some people are just keeping their social distance. Jeremy Miller, Family Life News.
All right, Jeremy, thank you for that. The mask debate alive and well in Pennsylvania. Governor Wolf wants state lawmakers to make masks mandatory in school. But so far, the General Assembly refusing to budge, saying that's a decision best left for the local schools to decide. Wolf's pandemic powers, remember, were stripped back in May. It's forced the chief executive to govern by consensus instead of through executive order.
Having the legislature involved in these emergency operations requires negotiation between the two branches, just like legislation does, and that's a lot messier than the governor just being able to act.
That's Dan Mallison. He's a public policy expert at Penn State. Some parents of unvaccinated children want a remote learning option in Corning, New York, where school starts in less than 2 weeks. Fred Warwick is frustrated that his daughter's being denied online learning.
It just doesn't make sense to me that they were able to do this for the last year and a half, and all of a sudden now they don't have this available.
Corning Superintendent Michelle Caulfield.
We can move to a remote
option if we need to. But right now, we're hoping that our safety procedures and processes that we have in place will be able to keep us open for the 5 days a week.
Caulfield says the current COVID trajectory in Corning does not necessitate the Zoom school option just yet. The tiny town of Woodhull, New York, has been overwhelmed with donations after flash floods last week ravaged southern Steuben County. In fact, local officials are urging residents to stop bringing household items to the town hall. They are inundated there. Instead, they are saying you should donate money or perhaps gift cards. You can send donations to the United Way of the Southern Tier or drop them off at the community church there in Woodhull, New York. A restaurant in flood-wrecked Addison, New York, just next door, it's offering free meals to the flood victims. The owners of Franz Landing says all you have to do is call or come in and identify yourself as a flood victim, and you can get some free food. They're also delivering meals directly to homes.
We're well over 400 meals have been served already. We're so happy that they have. And Act and Do, which is the Addison community, which we are a part of and partner with.
Troy Preston says despite the grim situation facing families in Jasper, Woodhull, and Addison, it is inspiring to see neighbor helping neighbor during their hour of need. Buffalo Bills head coach Sean McDermott says he's frustrated by the number of unvaccinated players on his team. McDermott notes there's little he can do really other than try to influence them to get the shot.
Again, I go back to the personal decision on this thing, and I respect our players' positions. In my personal opinion, it's right to get vaccinated.
The Bills are considered to be at the lower end of the NFL scale in having about 80% of their players vaccinated against COVID-19. Well, you're going to want to act fast if you're looking to snag some Beaver Stadium seats to see Penn State play football this season. The Nittany Lions tickets are the second highest in demand for college football across the country. They trail only Alabama, according to StubHub. Rival Michigan is third, followed by Texas A&M and Notre Dame. Chefs in training, making sure that the Little Leaguers stay well-fed during the World Series ongoing in Williamsport. Students at the Pennsylvania College of Technology have been preparing three meals a day for all the teams involved from all parts of the country.
We put out some things like a Southwest pulled pork lasagna. We did some pan-seared salmon with a wild berry sauce to represent the Northwest. The Deep South, that's some of my favorite food. We did Nashville chicken.
And it gives everybody at Little League a different taste of different regions everywhere around the country. Because they don't get that when they're at home.
So how do the Little Leaguers like the food?
Yeah, I find it pretty interesting, like trying food from California and stuff when I just live in the Midwest. It's kind of cool seeing what other people eat.
It's been pretty good. We had like some like steak sandwiches and like hot dogs, like you said. And it's been pretty good.
Only a few teams left in the Little League World Series, but the student chefs, well, they're still firing up those grills. They'll be cooking and preparing meals throughout the rest of the tournament, which will end on Sunday. And speaking of Williamsport, the two-minute drill next in sports with Sonny Delphia.
Yeah, Bob, it's championship weekend at the Little League World Series. Tomorrow, Sioux Falls, South Dakota, who has not given up a run all series long, will battle Hamilton, Ohio in the Tom Seaver Final. Ohio beat Torrance, California, 42 to advance. Hawaii will play Taylor, Michigan, who beat Ella Bruning in Texas 15-6 in the Hank Aaron Final. The winner of each bracket will meet in Sunday's championship game, weather permitting. To the big leagues, and the Yankees' winning streak lives on. Aaron Judge hit a go-ahead single in the ninth inning.
And that one is chopped to Odor. And the Yankees win again. The Yankees have won 12 in a row.
The Yankees beat the Athletics 7-6. That's the Yankees' 12th win in a row, the longest winning streak since 1961. Even Aaron Judge is impressed.
Go out there expecting to win every single game. But, you know, 12 in a row, that was a little bit of luck sprinkled in there, too.
The Philly struggles continue, falling to the Diamondbacks 8-7. That's Philadelphia's seventh loss in nine games. They're 5.5 games out of the National League East lead. The Brooms are out in Flushing. Giants completed a three-game sweep of the Mets with their 3-2 win. The Mets have lost 11 of 13 to fall 7.5 games out of the East. Luis Rojas.
You know, I felt that we're going to win more games than this, and we've been in those games. There's games that have been, you know, separated by long runs, a lot of them, and games going into extra innings, too. against the Dodgers specifically.
The Pirates scored 8 runs in the 7th for an 11-7 win over the Cardinals. The Nationals lose in Miami 7-5. White Sox pound 4 homers in their 10-7 win over the Blue Jays. Toronto, 5.5 games out of the American League wild card. Cleveland beat the Rangers 10-6. The NFL preseason comes to an end this weekend. The Jets host the Eagles tonight. The Steelers play at the Panthers. Tomorrow, the Bills host the Packers. Sunday, the Giants host the Patriots. The Browns play in Atlanta. And Nebraska and Illinois help kick off the college football season tomorrow. For Family Life, I'm Sonny Dolphiet.
Wow, it's here already. Thank you, Sonny. Still to come on this Friday edition of the Noon Report. One bomber, not two, in Afghanistan. A window into the womb in Dallas, Texas. And history comes alive at the Civil War Museum.
Yesterday, a suicide bomber from an ISIS-related group attacked crowds outside the Kabul airport. How will the U.S. respond? For the Colson Center, I'm John Stone Street. This is Breakpoint. Well, given just how badly President Biden has handled the withdrawal of U.S. troops from Afghanistan up to this point, it's impossible to predict just how the U.S. will respond to an attack by an ISIS-related suicide bomber that resulted in the killing of at least 12 U.S. service members and at least 60 others hoping to flee the country. If yesterday's press conference by the president was meant to inspire confidence or to provide clarity, it failed to do so. Now, the question, how should the U.S. respond to a horrific attack like this one? That's another matter. Thankfully, there's a long history of theological reflection of what's known as just war theory. It's helpful, especially at times like these, when the anger, the hurt, the desire for retaliation can overwhelm our senses. Acts of war should always be thought of only as extraordinary means. Christian thinkers throughout the ages, from Augustine to Aquinas to Luther to others today, have struggled to articulate acts of war within a Christian moral framework so that believers could figure out ways to actively oppose grave injustice while not becoming part of the injustice themselves. Some believers have, of course, held that this sort of thing is impossible. They've embraced various degrees of pacifism. The majority of the church, however, settled on a set of criteria that, if met, would justify acts of war. The first set of criteria has to do with the right to war. It demands that leaders and nations never go to war without fully counting the cost. Not only must there be good reason, but all other options must have been exhausted. Extraordinary injustice has to be present or imminent. Acts of war must be waged by legitimate authorities, not just by vigilante individuals. There has to be a likely chance of success, and the act of retaliation cannot exceed the evil that it opposes. So, even a just cause is not sufficient justification in and of itself if it's mixed with unjust goals or an overly devastating response or an unlikely chance of success. The second set of criteria has to do with governing right behavior once a war has been waged. So even when fighting and killing is justified, not all means of fighting and killing are justified. Whenever noncombatants are caught in crossfire, it's tragic, but noncombatants should never, ever be targeted. Nor should military personnel be targeted if wounded, captured, or incapacitated in some way. Only the force necessary to accomplish a mission as quickly as possible is justified force. Now, of course, there's a vast difference between a nice and neat theory like this and how it's applied on the ground. Rarely will both sides, or even anyone on one side for that matter, agree that each and every criteria has been sufficiently met. All of which brings us back to the very not theoretical question of the moment. How should President Biden respond to the murderous bombing of innocent Afghans and American service members yesterday? Going by all of these principles alone, there's ample justification for swift and serious retaliation, as well as proactive measures to prevent any further attacks. On the other hand, it's just not clear, given our dramatically reduced forces, self-imposed foolish limitations, and the overall foolish strategy in Afghanistan, that there's a reasonable chance of success in any retaliation. Look, the tragedy here. And it's far beyond national embarrassment. It's even in addition to yesterday's tragic loss of life. Is that the good that desperately needs to be done in Afghanistan right now and the evil that desperately needs to end there won't be. See, this is one of those times that swift and strong action is required for peace and protection. Any American retaliation has to be more than a symbolic act. Otherwise, it's not a step towards justice at all. For the Colson Center, I'm John Stone Street with Breakpoint.
We are coming up on 19 past the hour. Kevin Williams next.
Here is your Family Life weather forecast for this afternoon. Across much of Pennsylvania into the southern tier of New York, variably cloudy, sunny breaks, humid, couple of scattered showers and thundery downpours with high temperatures in the 80s. Farther north in the Buffalo, Rochester, Syracuse corridor, partly sunny but cooler and less humid. High temperatures mid-70s to low 80s. For tonight, partly cloudy skies, low temp 60s, low 70s. Tomorrow and Sunday, warm and humid, clouds, sunny breaks, couple of scattered showers and thunderstorms. High temperatures mid-70s to mid-80s tomorrow and the 80s on Sunday.
All right, Kevin, thank you very much at the Weather Center. This is the Noon Report on Family Life. I'm your host, Bob Price, and here's what's happening this Friday afternoon, the 27th of August. The Pentagon today claimed yesterday's carnage in Kabul, Afghanistan, was the work of a single suicide bomber, not two. President Biden has vowed to make ISIS-K pay for the terror attack that took the lives of 170 people, including 13 American service members.
For those who carried out this attack, know this, we will not forgive. We will not forget. We will hunt you down and make you pay.
The terror attack outside the Kabul airport has thrown a monkey wrench into our getting out of Afghanistan strategy. Former Army Special Ops Forces member Jim Hansen says ISIS-K puts the terror in terrorism.
ISIS-K is a bunch of Taliban guys who thought that the Taliban wasn't savage and barbaric enough for them. So they split off and formed their own group. And I guess if they got in control, rather than just shooting women in the back of the head at the soccer stadium, they might do live beheadings on pay-per-view. They're obviously a menace.
Hansen says the one thing that ISIS-K and the Taliban have in common is that they both hate America. Ohio Congressman Jim Jordan.
When you project weakness from the Oval Office, as Joe Biden does, bad guys do bad things.
Despite the carnage, the Biden administration has vowed to stick to its August 31st deadline for us getting out of there. Correspondent Charlie Daggett continues our coverage.
The bombings have not only complicated the evacuation plan for remaining U.S. citizens and thousands of service members, for Afghans, it confirms the darkest fears of what's to come once American forces pull out for good.
Former Afghan war vet and Medal of Honor recipient Dakota Myers says yesterday's terror attack was made possible by bad decision-making from the Oval Office.
This was preventable. We have the most powerful military on the face of the planet, and for this to happen is absolutely ridiculous. And yes, we all want to be out of Afghanistan, but we do care about how we leave Afghanistan.
Flags are flying at half-staff today all across the country in honor of those 13 fallen U.S. service members. Yesterday was the single deadliest day for our fighting forces in more than a decade. Forecasters warn that Ida could be the strongest hurricane of the season once it roars ashore along the Gulf Coast late Sunday or early Monday. There's a hurricane warning in New Orleans where this woman is getting ready.
We have our normal generators. We have a lot of water. We have everything we need, and we're just going to pray for the best.
Meteorologist Bill Caron.
The Hurricane Center thinks this thing will have Category 2 100-mile-per-hour winds just after midnight Saturday night into Sunday morning. They are now saying a major hurricane landfall with 115-mile-per-hour winds as a Category 3.
That landfall expected somewhere near Morgan City, Louisiana, late Sunday or early Monday. Today we heard for the very first time from the Capitol police officer who killed an unarmed Trump supporter during the January 6 riots in Washington. Lieutenant Michael Byrd says he waited as long as he could before using lethal force and thinks his action saved lives.
I've been yelling and screaming as loud as I was, please stop, get back, stop. She was posing a threat to United States House of Representatives.
Byrd shot and killed 35-year-old San Diego native Ashley Babbitt, an Air Force veteran who was among those who stormed the Capitol that day. The man who killed a famous Kennedy is getting a chance at freedom.
There's a parole hearing today in California for 77-year-old Sirhan Sirhan.
Senator Kennedy has been shot. Is that possible?
In 1968, he shot and killed Senator Robert F. Kennedy. It's his 16th hearing, and for the first time, there will be no prosecutor to argue that he should remain behind bars. The new DA believes prosecutors have no role in deciding whether prisoners should be let go.
Correspondent Steve Kaifin with food prices sky high. There's word today that the average American wastes about $1,500 a year on food they will never eat. That's one-fifth of the typical American's yearly grocery budget. Landlords have scored a major victory at the U.S. Supreme Court. In a 6-3 ruling, the justices have rejected the Biden administration's latest moratorium on evictions.
Although the Justice Department lawyers argued that with the new Delta variant, there was good reason to continue the eviction moratorium, a majority of the justices, who are conservative, said that only Congress could grant such an extension.
Legal analyst Lori Levinson. A pro-life event tomorrow night at the American Airlines Center in Dallas, Texas, will offer a window into the womb. Focus on the Family is sponsoring what it calls Sea Life 2021. It features a concert from Christian recording artist Matthew West, followed by a live 4D ultrasound of an unborn baby beamed onto a giant jumbotron screen inside that arena. Focus on the Family spokesman Paul Batura.
A preborn baby inside the womb is a living, breathing, valuable gift from God.
The Sea Life event starts at 8 p.m. Saturday Eastern Standard Time. You can stream it online at focusonthefamily.com. Well, Christmas Day is less than 4 months away, and experts are telling us to tell you it might not be a bad idea to get some of that Christmas shopping done now. The fear is that the ongoing pandemic will cause transportation and supply issues. It may leave some store shelves empty this holiday season. Not to mention, costs are only expected to go up from now until the start of the Christmas shopping season. It will be here before you know it, folks. 25 past the hour. This is the Noon Report.
Hi, I'm Tracy Lynn, and this is our summer-long staycation destination series. Every Friday during the Noon Report, we'll spotlight a staycation destination that's not far from home and won't break the bank. This week, we're taking you to the National Civil War Museum in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania.
My name is Brett Kelly. I'm the curator of collections here at the National Civil War Museum.
What can folks who visit the National Civil War Museum expect to discover?
Well, when our visitors come here, they will be able to see the entire war represented under one roof, which is actually fairly rare for museums to bite off such a big chunk of such a large subject. But we try and tackle it head on. We talk about not only the North, but the North and the South. We talk about slavery, things that aren't necessarily that pleasant to talk about, but we do talk about it because it's our history and we need to get it out there so that we remember it and we can learn from it.
Yeah.
And when people come in, they'll be able to basically take their pick of what interests them, from the causes of the war all the way up through the war to the lives of veterans and how they adjusted after going through that experience.
Brett, the museum staff have really focused in on sharing about the Civil War from multiple perspectives. Why do you think that's important?
Because there were over 2 million men, actually, and women who fought during the war. And each one of them had their own perspective on the war and how it happened. And today, we have many different groups in this country, whether it's a geographical separation or racial or economic. There are so many different perspectives on how we look at history now. And it's important that we cover all of those.
And so when you say you're covering it from multiple perspectives, what does it look like?
Right. We do actually have, in our first gallery, we introduce the visitor to 10 different characters on video, and they are representations of people who lived during the war. You have Northern soldiers, Southern soldiers, you have brothers and sisters, mothers and fathers, you have slaves and freedmen. It really opens up how the war affected everyone and not just a few. It was really a turning point in our history. And our videos, as you're walking through the galleries and the war progresses, it's set up in chronological order, you'll see more videos throughout the galleries, and their stories continue on all the way up until the end of the war and beyond.
So, Brett, what is your favorite part of the museum or a story that stands out from the Civil War?
One of the things that I really enjoy about the museum is the way it's set up, the flow of the history. It's set up in chronological order, so it's really easy to follow, starting with the causes of the war, how the tensions built up, the firing on Fort Sumter, the first action in the war, and then it carries on from there all the way through to the very end. And there are a lot of stories. Some of my favorites, there was a slave named Robert Smalls. He was actually enslaved, and his job basically was to pilot a steamboat called the Planter. It was a Confederate ship, and one evening when the captain and crew went on shore, he went and got his family and some friends, and he piloted the ship out of Charleston Harbor, past all the gun emplacements and forts, and he brought it out to the blockading squadron and surrendered it. Before the end of the war, he had piloted ironclad boats for the Union Army. After the war, he became a congressman. He just did so many amazing things, from starting out as a slave to being a U.S. congressman. There was people like Dr. Mary Walker, who was one of the first female doctors in the country, and she actually earned the Medal of Honor during her service during the Civil War. Stories like that are amazing. The country was that important to them, their cause and their country. When you see artifacts here at the museum, it really does give you a new perspective on how we got where we are today.
We hope you've enjoyed coming along on our staycation destination. You can hear all the podcasts online. Join us next week as we visit a new destination.
Tracy, looking forward to that. You can download our summer-long staycation destination series free of charge at familylife.org.
Good afternoon. Here is your Family Life regional weather forecast. A big national weather story emerging will be Ida. The soon-to-be strong hurricane could threaten New Orleans on the anniversary of Katrina by this Sunday. Those with interest across the central Gulf Coast will certainly want to pay attention. No such concerns here, but some tropical weather is likely this weekend with humidity and a few scattered showers and storms. For this afternoon, across much of Pennsylvania into the southern tier of New York, variably cloudy, sunny breaks, humid, couple of scattered showers and thundery downpours with high temperatures in the 80s. Farther north, in the Buffalo, Rochester, Syracuse corridor, partly sunny but cooler and less humid. High temperatures, mid-70s to low 80s. For tonight, partly cloudy skies, a shower storm chance early for some, low temps 60s and low 70s. Tomorrow and Sunday, warm and humid, clouds, sunny breaks, a couple of scattered showers and thunderstorms. High temperatures, mid-70s to mid-80s tomorrow, in the 80s on Sunday.
All right, Kevin, have yourself a wonderful weekend. And finally from us at noon today, a teenage pilot from Belgium has just landed in New York City. A 19-year-old Zara Rutherford is on a mission to become the youngest woman to fly solo around the world. Did I mention she's 19? Her plan is to travel to 52 countries and 5 continents over the next 12 weeks. Not a bad itinerary for a teenager. That's the world we live in Friday, the 27th of August. I'm Bob Price. Family Life News.
You've been listening to the Noon Report, heard weekdays on Family Life. Thank you for listening.